I was a man who flew above Japan and watched the napalm fall. We sure tried from up there in the sky. I wish we'd killed them all. Wish we'd killed them all.
Out of the sky, the napalm fell like fireflies, and the world turned bleeding red. Smoke burned my nose, and fire stuck to my clothes. I ran off among the
looking down. There's nowhere to run. I'm in the plane.
I'm in the flame.
Tokyo's burning like the sun. Tokyo's burning like the sun. In magic glass, where time doesn't pass, I'm shooting everything. Looking down, there's nowhere to run. I'm in the plane.
I'm in the flame.
Tokyo's burning like the sun. Tokyo's burning like
I'm on the ground.
Looking down, there's nowhere to run. I'm in the plane.
I'm in the flame.
Tokyo's burning like the sun. Tokyo's burning like the sun.
Welcome to Poets Cafe. We're here in the studio with Tony Barnstone, Ariana Hall, and John Kleinbell. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
It's great to have you here and great to welcome you back, Tony. You're here with because of Tongue of War, which won the John Ciardi Prize for Poetry, selected by B.H. Fairchild, who writes in his foreword, "Tongue of War is one of the most distinctive manuscripts I have ever judged for a book prize." And I want to get another little blurb in here, too, before we get into it. Pulitzer Prize writer Robert Olin Butler writes, "Barnstone has revealed humankind's capacity both for evil and for redemption with a power that few writers have ever achieved." Tongue of War, you say, is a love letter to the World War II generation. Let's talk about your entry into this journey and the sequence of this history in verse. It began with your dinner and conversation with Brigadier General Paul Tibbetts. Tell me about that very strange dinner.
It was, I guess now, almost 17 years ago. And I was first year professor coming out of grad school at Whittier College. And Brigadier General Paul Tibbetts, who of course was the pilot of the Enola Gay, which was the the plane that dropped the atom bomb on Hiroshima, had been invited to give a talk at Whittier, and they invited me to come. I think partly they must have realized that my in-laws were Japanese-American. My wife was born in Japan, was a Japanese citizen, and so that maybe they expected fireworks to ensue.
Knowing you.
And as a kind of green, wet behind the ears guy who couldn't really hold his tongue, I did ask the general the question that I think is
the question.
The question. How do you feel about having dropped a weapon of mass destruction on a civilian population and having killed 100,000 people? And this is the interesting thing, the thing that really sparked the whole project, which is he said to me, in total war, everyone is guilty. Mm. And everyone deserves to die, even babes in arms. I'm the hero who saved a million lives, is what he told me. And that was kind of shocking, but at the same time, I suddenly had that shift, you know, that shift where you suddenly see the other person's point of view.
Yes.
That mirror shift. And then he said something quite interesting. He said, if you could have been there, if you could have felt the patriotism that we felt at that time, you wouldn't even ask the question. And that made me think, well, what would it be like to write a poem from the point of view of the general, which I did. And then I thought, what would it be like to write a poem from the point of view of someone on the ground at Hiroshima? And so I started doing research into oral histories, and out of that came a bunch of Hiroshima poems that over 15 years developed into the whole war in the Pacific, from Pearl Harbor to Nagasaki and the post-war, that became Tongue of War.
It's an amazing journey. It's hard to believe that somebody could have that actual attitude toward others. But at the same time, when you enter the journey and you read through the book, for me, my own personal experience helped me to expand and understand those viewpoints. It's a very complex world we live in. And I think, you know, one can run around like shouting for peace, but if we don't understand how these perspectives are arrived at, mm-hmm. then we'll really never know how to change them. And this is a book that can absolutely change perspective.
Well, in fact, that's the that's what actually one of the poems toward the end of the book actually says something very similar. There's a line from the point of view of the bombardier on Boxcar, which dropped the atom bomb on Nagasaki. And what the bombardier says is, seems everyone has point of view, but no one has perspective.
Yes, I remember that line too.
And that, I think, sums up the whole book. It's all about points of view.
That's funny, I had that thought. Yeah. Let's start with a poem from the book, and then we can talk a little bit about the collaboration that's gone on between the three of you, this wonderful, exciting collaboration. Which poem?
Oh, I had the idea that I might start by reading the last poem in the book, which is from the point of view of a U.S. soldier who's retired. He's at a retirement home. It's called At the Retirement Home. And he had survived the Bataan Death March. And the Bataan Death March was when the American Army and the Philippine Army was captured by the Japanese and marched across land to the prison camps for days. And 60 miles to prison camps, 75,000 soldiers, more than a fourth of them died en route, either from exposure, starvation, disease, or simply having their heads chopped off by samurai swords, run over by half tracks, or just shot point blank. Mm-hmm. It was one of the great massacres of the war. That's what this guy survived. And I'm going to read it in character.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought maybe John might sing a little bit a cappella of what his song version of it, so you have a sense of how we go from poem to song, and it's different for each song, but I'll read it. I'll say that it's a sonnet. All the poems in the book are in form, but my guess is you won't be able to hear the rhymes in the sonnet, but of course...
You're good.
But of course you want the other thing when it comes to the song. So here it is, At the Retirement Home. I've had both knees replaced. I got a steel pin in my hip. I don't hear you so good, but I'm not stupid, son. How would you feel surviving the Bataan Death March? No food for days, no water, and the ones who fell behind were bayoneted where they lay. And now you're marching off to death. Real hell is not old age, though. No, taken away the rights we died for, saying, torture's right. That's hell. Hand me the iron and those shirts, would you? Thanks, son. As long as I have fight, I'll love this country till it hurts. And it does. This is worse than what I saw overseas. Torture. In America.
It's true, I'm getting older. I've got a steel pin in my shoulder. I've had both of my knees replaced. There are worse things that I've faced.
Great. I can see that how the connection has been made there. It's really, well, I would like to speak to your viewpoint as a songwriter, deriving from poetry. How did you make this connection? How did you make the transition over from the actual poem to your, to creating the song? I mean, I know you have a long history, a lineage of folk in your family line, and you're known around the Los Angeles area and the studio and the stages here. Tell us a little bit about your process with Tony.
Yeah, it's been a really just an incredible experience working with Tony on these poems and translating them into songs. We've definitely had the luxury of him helping edit the poems into kind of lyrical, more of like a song lyric format. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's been, he's taken the poems, translated them into some lyric style more writing, and then what we've done with it is taken those lyrics and just kind of shifted them around, figure out like what, because a lot of times with songwriting, you got to figure out like what's the chorus, like
what's the
whole
hook?
Song going to be based around. Uh-huh. And so for us, this song was really about like, you know, his just being totally disgusted by there being torture in America. So this song, the title of the song is Torture in America, and it just kind of rails against that and how this is something that he can't stand for.
Right.
And yeah, some of the songs was very natural. Like this song, it was pretty clear to me after reading it a couple of times what the focus should be, and and then it's just a matter of like figuring out the best way to deliver the story over a song format versus the poetry format.
Right. And since you've written it in sonnets, did you ever have the idea that it would be eventually put into music? I mean, you're branching out into all these multimedias, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but. When you first, you love the sonnet, I know you do. So yeah. Tell me about that, the idea of form and how that.
Yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing. I have had the idea for years of turning my poetry into music, and, but in a certain way, when I was actually writing the book, mostly my desire was to write it in form as a way of giving. Honor to the people whose stories I was telling, and as a way of kind of creating the transformation of art while at the same time allowing them to really speak in their own voices, to kind of be a journalist, but at the same time add my touches through rhyme and rhythm. But at the same time, as I said before, to make it invisible.
Yes.
You don't really hear the rhythm unless you listen for it. You don't really hear the rhymes because they're partway through a line, they're in jammed. And so, no, it was a radical shift to change it into song, because the elements of song that are already in poetry, I mean, there's one villanelle, for example, in the book, and that would be a natural for songs because it already has the repeated elements.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing we had to do, the three of us as songwriters, they're really the songwriters, but me as helping with the lyrics, is to figure out what rhymes I could amp up and put at the ends of phrases or lines, you know, and make them really more jingly than you would ever want in a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, this question of where the chorus. And I'll say the great thing about working with John and Ariana is that they are they have great instincts as to what is something that's catchy, listenable, but at the same time, at the metaphorical and symbolic and thematic core of the poem, and they make that the emotional core of the song.
That's the best collaboration you can have. Yeah. Somebody as a poet, you know, who's sensitive to all those aspects that you want to convey into the song. Let's jump into another song of this that's written based on several of the poems, I think, within the book, and then we'll talk a little more.
Sure.
You're listening to Poets Cafe. We're here in the cafe today with Tony Barnstone, John Kleinbell, and Ariana Hall talking about Tongue of War. This is 90.7 FM, and we're on Facebook. You can friend us there at Poets Cafe.
La la la, la la la. Kansas until I had to wrap them up in canvas. See, I knew nothing of the Philippines till I woke up in this red dream. I saw it all. I saw them die. Saw it all, but had no time to cry. I saw the young men twisting on the tables. I swear that I did all I was able. Antiseptic stink of gangrene. Soldiers weeping in their dreams. I saw it all. I saw them die. Saw it all, but had no time to cry. As they grow cold, I close their eyes. Through it all, had no time to cry.
Declare this a hit. It's just extraordinary. The lyrics, the beautiful harmonies, the words behind it. Ariana, you have an incredible, exquisite voice.
Thank you.
I know you're very involved in sound, music. You have a career that spans the globe, a degree in jazz. Can you talk to us briefly about the collaborative effort, how you entered into this?
John one day, I think, called me up and just said, you know, there's this project that I've begun working on, and It's a song about war, and as I'm working on it with Tony, this poet friend of mine, it's looking like there are some songs that need to be sung about the women in the war. And I guess they had realized early on, and he, you know, asked if I would want to be a part of it, and I'm very honored that he did, and you know, I'm so proud of the work that we've done. And when we sat down to write this one, this was definitely one of the ones that happened really magically. If I remember correctly, John and I have, you know, different tastes and abilities, and when we came together on this one, it was like this, from my perspective, is this perfect amalgamation of all the things I feel like I'm good at, all the things I feel like he's good at, and it just kind of naturally gelled really nicely. I remember that right after we wrote it, we were so excited. We went across the hall to my neighbors, and we just said, can we play this for you really quick? And we popped it into their CD player, and I don't know if they were expecting that much, but they were like, whoa, that's really good.
Yeah.
So for being a part of this project, it's been, you know, just so beautiful, and taking, you know, all of the detail of a poem and managing to, as we were kind of saying, find the core, the heart of the song.
Yes.
And then capture it in this completely different format. You know, I think a lot of people think poetry and song lyrics are very similar, but they're very different. They have a different focus. They have a different, they have developed differently. You know, the punchline needs to be the chorus instead of at the end. You know, that's why a lot of these have changed titles.
That's true. Although we started out as songs, the poets started out as singers, the old bards of our past. And it's wonderful to see this conversion happen again and branch out into these various mediums, because with an idea like this, such an important idea, it's not exclusive for poets. We can now bring it to everybody, and they can understand these various diverse viewpoints of the war. You're really innovative in so many ways. One of the brightest thinkers that I know in poetry today, and you're branching out into several mediums. Talk a little bit about you have a graphic novel coming out. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, just to back up here a moment, this is going to be a CD, mm-hmm. which people will be able to buy.
Yes, and the title will not actually be Tongue of War, it'll be Tokyo Burning.
So. Okay, very good. Yes. And then, of course, Tongue of War is available, and they can buy that from BKMK?
BKMK, yeah. And
press.
Yes, exactly. And the what's nice is that the press has agreed to also create an edition of the book with the CD bound in with it, so
beautiful.
People can buy them together. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay, so tell me about your graphic novel that you've got going on.
Sure.
That's another way to reach out into the public. You
absolutely.
Know?
You know, I would say that my whole career as a writer has been an attempt in various ways to find ways of reaching out to a population that feels about poetry that it's not for them, it's for people with PhDs. It's they need their Batman decoder ring to be able even to begin to understand a poem. It's something that's taught in English classes, not something that you enjoy yourself. And my desire is to find ways of bridging the gap between the audience and the work, because I'm a big fan. I love poetry like other people love video games, music, or whatever else, you know, or their wives, girlfriends, husbands, children.
Not to mention you come from a family of poets,
yes.
Your dad, Willis Barnstone, and
mm-hmm.
your sister,
Aliki
Barnstone, yes, yeah. All prolific, very well established, renowned poets, really.
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that way. And the graphic novel idea is to take a series of sonnets I've written in the Pulp Fiction mode and write three intertwined novellas that will become a graphic novel, with the idea of writing one in the werewolf mode, one in the haunted house mode, and one in the alien invasion mode, to get 14-year-old boys who prefer to play video games and read graphic novels to come back to poetry.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, we all want to come back to poetry. That's what we're doing here at Poets Cafe. And we thank you very much for coming to the studio. It's been an honor to read, to review your book, and to have you, the three of you here. All right, so where can we find the music? Where can our listeners find you on the internet and purchase a copy and listen to what you're doing?
Well, the duo, John and Ariana, are called Genuine Brandish. That's the name of their duo. And so if you look up Genuine Brandish or the title of the album's Tokyo Burning.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Lois P. Jones, and my guests have been Tony Barnstone, John Kleinbell, and Ariana Hall. Look for our Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK, Pacifica Radio, for all of Southern California and beyond.